listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
It's good to be back with you in studio. I have joining me today Dr. Philip Chavez. We're going to be talking about a really important topic that is at the heart of the heart problem in our society today, and that is singleness, prolonged singleness, difficulty finding a spouse. Thanks for being with us today.
It's good to be here, Timmery. Always a joy.
So when we were talking about what we would cover on this episode, right away you said, we've got to cover this one topic of singleness. Man, it is just impacting so many men and women.
That's right. Yeah, and we're seeing it growing today, and a lot of people are just really mystified by it and want resolutions, want answers, and want resolution.
So maybe you find yourself in that single state, and you're saying, I don't know what to do. Maybe you've given up. Maybe you feel like you have tried everything possible and things just still aren't working out for you. I hope that this episode, yes, it does deal with some kind of practical, topical issues, but it's really something for you to sit and think about and identify in your life ways you can adjust and really contemplate those areas where you might be struggling to live out this Christian mission of who we are and what marriage and family and dating is meant to be. So we've identified, Dr. Chavez has identified four key areas that we're going to talk about. The issue of feminism and its impact on our singleness. The lost sense of family and how many do not look at family as the paradigm for life and how it's the ultimate happiness of that developing human person. How we're struggling just in bonding and how many people just have this difficult time with struggles, insecurities, inferiorities, maybe even a psychological struggle when it comes to bonding. And finally, we'll talk about the confusion for both men and women, but especially for men on how to actually date. So let's start by talking about how you think feminism has specifically, when we talk about feminism, we're talking about radical pro-abortion, anti-man, pro-contraception type of feminism that says there's no difference between men and women.
Sure. And that, well, that's a radical approach. I think there's lesser elements of feminism and lesser strands of it. And of course, you know, it's almost something that's almost undefined now. But when I think about this more and more, Timmery, I have to just boil feminism down to challenging a man in three things and going back to his traditional roles. He was a primary leader, protector, and provider in the family. And what I think has happened in feminism, a man has been challenged in all three. And so instead of being led, women are now inclined and even boast about being independent. Instead of being protected, women now are put in modes where they're competitive. And instead of men being now the providers, they're in a world now where women are being self-sufficient. And so it's very, very hard for a man to find his identity and to find his role when he's not standing up and doesn't have a place of, I'll use the word pride, in leading in a family, protecting, and providing. And so I think if I were to boil it down to any three things, I think this is what's most disturbing or to him and or intrinsically disabling him from marriage. And I believe, by the way, the cause of divorce in Catholic Christian circles is not so much for spiritual reasons. I believe these are the three key reasons that are challenged and issues surrounding these are why marriages are falling apart, even in devout Christian Catholic homes.
So you're saying when a man isn't able to lead in his home, to protect his wife and family, and provide for them, his very identity is brought into question and he may not step into that role anymore and the marriage may fizzle away or no relationship will even begin if the disrespect for these three areas is there from the get-go.
That's right. A man just, in the order of nature, he just needs to know he's respected and admired as a leader, as a protector, and as a provider.
So you're saying maybe in cases where maybe a man finds a woman attractive, right? Mm-hmm. And he starts to kind of pursue in some subtle way, maybe even just to introduce himself to her. Sometimes I find that men often feel shut down right away because there's this dominance of the presence of the woman. Well, I don't have to meet you, or you're not necessary, even for a basic conversation to get to know the person. It's like the time of day isn't given, or I have too much on my plate to even look at you.
That's right. It's almost like, you know, a woman, when she dates a man now, she wants a curriculum vitae or something. But yeah, it's very, very hard if a man isn't respected for just kind of his natural role, which goes to his identity of who he is, that he is a leader. And so when he doesn't get signals that she defers to him in that, yeah, it's hard for him to rise up. Now, that being said, you know, it's interesting. I've heard, I'm not sure if you would agree with this, but the number one complaint of women about dating is a man won't pick out the restaurant.
A man, oh, how interesting.
He thinks he's doing, deferring to her in some kind of relational charity to ask where she wants to go. And ultimately, women aren't impressed with that. Women want to say, hey, hon, we're going to this restaurant, you know, and I think, I'd like to shoot for 10. You know, how is that? What do you think? And so, you know, then he's allowed to give her input, but he should make a decision first. He should put a proposal on the table. And I think the last thing a woman wants to hear is, well, what would you like to do?
Well, and then it bounces back and forth. Well, I don't know. I'm really okay with anything. And I think some people are really trying to be, you know, easygoing.
That's
maybe
right.
They're nervous. But in reality, here's how it could work. I've chosen this restaurant. In my case, oh, I can't eat there. Or how about we try somewhere else? Like,
sure.
There's a respect for that decision, or respect for the idea even, but you can then give that feedback. But when people just aren't decisive at all to begin with, I think that a lot of women kind of quickly lose regard for that individual.
That's right. I mean, when women are turned off by guys who are not decisive, who do not take initiative, and they're not impressed by guys who are hesitant about things.
Mm.
And so when a guy's decisive, he takes initiative, he's not hesitant, a woman can admire that.
And those things, you know, I feel like sometimes modern society thinks that to be decisive means to be thoughtless, to be clueless, to not be inclusive. But in reality, if he's decisive, he's also willing to change the plan. Or in making that decision, he's thoughtfully considered who's involved and why this decision's been made. And I think that's something
right.
I really learned from that book, The Things You Really Need to Know About Men. We had been walking through it in the show. It's titled For Women Only.
Right.
And it talks about the inner life of the man and how in reality, men deeply think about things. The decisions they make are usually they've really calculated, this is why I've made this decision. And yet we don't hear that back and forth conversation as women. And so we assume, oh, he just randomly chose something. But in reality, he probably had a reason he chose it.
That's right. And to a greater or less degree, men are open to input, I find, most of the time. And they will want to consider a few things. And so much of what they do oftentimes is well thought through. If when they're supported as a leader, men, when they get that kind of trust, that they will rise up to that even more. That's how they will grow. That's how a woman can inspire a leader.
Well, I think for us women, that's where we're called into that complementarity. Sometimes we are actually verbally called to compliment, to open the door of encouragement when maybe a man's having a difficult time stepping into that area, where we vacate the area first, but then compliment him terms of what we know he has the potential to do.
That's right. And so you may want to say something like, I'd feel more comfortable if you just picked a place to go.
Mm.
Or, such that, I think if you make the decision, I think we'll be okay.
And I think the men really appreciate that, because what you did is you just gave them a mission. Hey, I want you to pick out that restaurant. They go, why didn't you tell me to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Or, hey, we need to do something Saturday to celebrate this occasion. You choose what we're going to do.
Exactly. Then that shows trust, and it shows you're willing to defer. Yeah, absolutely.
So then you talk about how basically if we're not respecting that position of the man, what's going to happen is at the same time, the woman is not going to be respected in a different way. You've talked about how the woman won't be venerated then if that respect isn't there.
That's right. And there's qualities of women that that men admire, their otherness, that they actually, I'll use the term, and I don't mind using this term, is venerate. And a woman's quality should be Augustae, even worship by a man. In other words, he wants to see some otherness and some aspects of femininity that are just beautiful, lovely, colorful, that really inspire him and motivate him and want him to be around that. And so the more a woman, manifests those things of femininity, the more a man is, he's kind of awakened, and he's he finds himself growing in attraction.
And when we talk about, living out your femininity, we're not just talking about how you do your hair, your nails, your makeup, how you dress. Those are very important parts of your femininity. But your femininity and beauty is not reduced to the exterior material reality. Beauty, what's so great about beauty is that when we talk about the beauty of a woman, ultimately the beauty of her soul should come forth that draws a man in addition to the physical beauty.
That's right. And and there's many ways she can show that softness and just that inner beauty, even by the subject she talks about, things which impress her, the things which she moves her in her life, things she's involved in. There's many ways women can express femininity, which can really enrich a man for which he will want to be around her. But yes, it is very important that in some way, while she reveals all of these things, there's a beauty about her that is still a mystery, and that he learned to venerate that mystery in woman.
So if we really look at society, we talk about the issue of singleness, the attitude of feminism that is being fostered within society, within us women, is very combative when it comes to our potential to go into a relationship. It's fighting against some of those necessary elements of allowing the man to be the leader, the protector, and the provider. And when he's called into that place, there's more opportunity for a relationship to blossom.
That's right. And when a man stands up and both embrace their roles, relationship just goes so much better.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Timory here. We're going to be talking a little later on about how so many single people are struggling to bond with another person, not just in romantic relationships, but even in friendships. Sometimes our inability to have good, solid friendships is an indicator that there's something going on in our bonding abilities that's preventing us from having real relationships. Coming up a little later on, we'll be talking about that. But right now, I want to talk about the lost sense of family and how this lost sense of family is really contributing to this attitude of singleness that we're kind of just complacent with. With me is Dr. Philip Chavez. Can you talk about that lost sense of family and how it's impacted the single person?
Sure. I think overall, it's important that we understand what does bring human happiness. And human happiness is found in love and relationships. And the primal place of love and relationships is with the family. And so the family becomes really the center place of a happy life. And I think what we've been raised in almost is that we're even suspect that that can happen in our families. And many have seen family strife or we've been distanced from family life, and we think of happiness as going somewhere else. And I think that's where the traveling craze people have comes from. They don't see themselves happy as being at home or being in some way rooted in home life. It's life isn't going to be complete until they have the ability to travel someday. But I think there's many factors which come together which make the prospect of family being as a place of happiness less and less. Again, family strife, parental strife, divorce. I think there's just a number of things which cease to make it a place of harmonious communion.
But also part of the struggle is that so many in my generation, we're looking at two and going into three generations now of multi-generational divorce.
Sure.
Where so many of my peers did not have either a mother or father ever present because of single parent households, or also because one of or both of those spouses really ended up in the workforce and not present in the home very often, other than to maybe tuck you into bed.
That's right. Yeah. And so there's this fear of this prospect of a happy marriage. I mean, I guess, divorce is in some way at the forefront. People fearing, well, what will happen if this all doesn't come to pass? But it is the case, I think, what's happening is, at the core of family life, really, and the beauty of family life, it starts in the love between husband and wife. And that's where it all begins. And so when that is harmonious and the kids see that, and they'll know they're loved once mother is loved and once father is loved, you know, between the two of them. And I think what's happening is, yeah, the father is becoming or has been, I think it is even worse times past, where he's become somewhat very distant. He was somewhat missing from the home. And the woman oftentimes is also missing too. Now she's many find more refuge in the workplace than they do actually at home. And like you say, they come home, they barely have time to microwave a dinner and tuck their kids into bed. And I think that's unfortunate, because what's happening is that the time is not just being spent in family life.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez. I'm Timory Millington. I think, too, when you're talking about how when there's a reverence, respect for family life, there is that openness, essentially what we're saying, to dating, recognizing that a true path of happiness isn't set in my career, my great grades in school, my degree, my public service achievements. My real happiness is in communion with others and creating a family, that we have the potential within us. And that potency is meant to bring us to our fullest potential.
Yeah. And that potential is found when we interact with others in communion. And a primal place to do that in family life, as we all know, is the dinner table. And so in some way, that should be sacrosanct. When I was being raised, for the most part, we were all together at dinner. And mom carefully prepared that dinner, too. So there was a lot of love and care. And the way, even to some extent too, the way the table was set and full preparation. And now when it's about paper plates and microwave food, it makes for hardly more of a forum by which people will want to commune around.
Well, and there's always one of the kids missing, because there's a baseball, there's basketball, there's dance, there's music lessons. You know, their extracurricular activities are great things. Don't get me wrong. I will be one of the first people to say that my dance background and the ability to dance and how much I danced really created the discipline that I have today, that really allowed my faith to grow. That being said, there has to be a central moment of the family coming together in that meal.
That's right. And sometimes we can get lost in that little house on the freeway, you know, where the home just becomes a train station where we just refuel and just head on to the next station. So parents have to be very cognizant of creating ways, or being very attentive to have certain times which they do set aside for family life. Because again, when they create that image of a healthy home communion, that extends into so many other areas, even faith. I really believe that one of the reasons people are failed to appreciate, even as Catholics, is being present at the table of our Lord, is because they have not grown appreciation for the table at home. Mm-hmm. And somehow how things go in the home is going to foreshadow in some way how things are going in the church.
Well, you're talking about the domestic church, because the family, you know, raising those young children through their teen years, that's the domestic church. That's where you learn the unconditional love of God the Father through unconditional love of your parents who still have rules.
Yeah. And on that point, you know, it's used to be the parents who used to teach us. And now with an age of catechism classes and almost seems like so much parish bureaucracy, now it almost seems like the faith is imparted through the churches now, when primarily the faith should be imparted at the home and parents are the primary instructors. And so when we don't have that faith life, parents are not going to have those forum, that live forum to teach their children, which is vital in their development.
One of the most important things in really fostering and developing that domestic church is not only that meal. That meal is pivotal, right? But you're, like you're saying, you're adding that catechesis that's taking place. But if those parents, to begin with, from the beginning of their marriage, have that respect for human life and that openness to human life, that sets the attitude between these two spouses for the respect for one another's body and the love that comes from them that's so great that it can create that other person. That if you have that mutual respect from the beginning, from dating even, that really, that chastity and that respect for human life sets the backdrop for family life.
That's right. And to that point, I think it's so easy to lose that sense in today's age where we're trying to achieve so much in the workplace. We forget really that relationships just aren't a place just to find love, but they're really a place to foster family. And so marriage is about ultimately, it has its in somewhat its crowning end is in the raising and the rearing of children. And unless there's kind of a surrender to that, the relationship really will never go well, because that becomes, you know, the I won't say the vehicle, but that becomes the activity which both parents share in the raising of their children. And you know as well as I, relationships never get really fostered unless the two share something together. And sharing the raising of children is one of the most beautiful things, and that really is that gives potency to really bond as a couple.
St. John Chrysostom actually talked about how essentially there has to be a bridge between the husband and the wife, and that bridge essentially in their relationship ultimately is in many ways not just their faith but the children, and how, just like you're saying, that common experience, those two grow side by side. And, you
That's
know
right.
You have the image of so many people think, oh, my loving relationship are the two facing each other, but they were just saying this at my sister's wedding a couple weeks ago, but it's really standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder, looking out and together taking things on.
That's right. And to see, yeah, again, to really embrace, as you say, embrace life. And I think too many go into marriage deferring that. And really, as the church taught, is when you go into marriage, you know, you should have that openness to children right away. I remember my brother telling me, he says, yeah, if you're not ready to have children, you're not ready to get married. And so, we need to really get back to that orientation. But I think, unfortunately, marriage can often be a place just to find love or to experience love or just to have support.
Well, and that's where the struggle is, because I think a lot of people end up not staying in a romantic relationship because they think, well, I'm not feeling, my needs aren't being met. And people go into a marriage thinking, well, I need to feel this way. I need to have this experience, or I need you, the other person, to make me happy.
That's right.
No one's going to ever make you happy. If you go into marriage thinking that your happiness is contingent upon that other person, you're bound to live a life of unhappiness.
That's right. And to think that there must be some 50-50 kind of arrangement, you know, that, hey, we all put in 50-50. It's all equal, whatever we do and put in. And yeah, with that kind of outset, marriage is dead on arrival.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so we're talking about this lost sense of family. Is maybe this has impacted you. You found yourself single, or maybe dating longer than you thought. Maybe you're delaying marriage. You're not open to having children. And so the point of even being married doesn't make sense. I think a lot of people aren't actually getting married because they don't see the point when they don't even plan to have children. Because at the heart of it, marriage is ultimately to help regulate sexual relationships,
yes,
right? God is giving us the graces of the sacrament to transform that to be a path of sanctity.
That's right.
Together. But then it's also to give that child their God-given right, their natural born right to a mother and a father.
That's right. And, you know, from what you just said, too, bringing that strong faith element, Timory, that family must be first found. Of course, we find family life in our own physical family, but as an adult, we must reconfigure in some way our vision of family upon our relationship with God, too. And so if we don't find communion there first, before marriage, it's going to be otherwise very hard to find communion in marriage.
And you may be listening and saying, what you're talking about, I didn't grow up with. You know, they may look at you, Dr. Chavez, and say, you say that you have these experiences of, you know, as a young boy, having your mom take care and preparing the meal and setting the table, but I didn't experience that. Maybe they had a friend who they would experience that every now and again, but we're talking about the ideal, the norm.
That's right.
How it's meant to be. So maybe you missed out on this, but guess what? Every Sunday at Mass, you have the opportunity to sit down at meal with family.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's TIMMERIE. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
So good to be back with you. I have in studio with me Dr. Philip Chavez. You can find his work at themensacademy.org. I was asking him about the trouble of singleness today, and you pointed to four key areas where the single person maybe might not have matured or seen examples of, or maybe they themselves are struggling with living it. And we talked about radical ideologies of feminism that have impacted our inability to be open even to a relationship, the need to revere family life. And now we're talking about bonding struggles. We're going to come to dating confusion in the next segment, but bonding struggles, man, I think we could just talk about a whole show about how pornography has created bonding struggles.
That's
but
right.
if you look at a person's upbringing today, so many of us have wounds from the way we were raised or not raised that is causing an inability to bond with future friendships or even spouses.
Yeah, and this is something a person should be cognizant of, especially if it hits them at a serious level. I mean, it is the case, I think, at this most serious level, there are people who do have a somewhat of an inability to bond well in marriage and maybe shouldn't consider it. But for those who are wounded in bonding and all the rest, or the ability to foster those initial relationships, it is true that somehow, if we're not able to bond with our parents and be what I would call beloved son or beloved daughter, and learn how to bond with our brothers and sisters as a loyal brother or loyal sister, and learn how to develop with others in mature male-female relationships, we're never going to learn how to bond well with a spouse. And really, spousal bonding really, I think, is contingent and in some way built upon the initial bonding we have in those areas.
Isn't that important to remember? So here's someone who's maybe struggled with that, maybe sure. in their upbringing. The question is then, where do I go from here? I didn't see this ideal of family life. I don't have a good relationship with my parents or siblings or whatever it might be. People ask these questions.
Sure.
Am I made to be single the rest of my life because I have an inability to bond? I think part of the answer is actually in psychological help, and that is going to see a therapist. Someone from the Catholic therapist list, you can go to catholictherapist.com and find someone who can help you. And maybe you need to go a couple times or for a year, whatever it might be.
Yeah, especially to work out some issues. And oftentimes a Catholic therapist can point out things that one needs to be aware of. You know, oftentimes, again, as you pointed out when you just started, you know, there's all these questions people have. And so a therapist can help point out those questions or point out those dimensions that may be missing and how to maybe work through those. But on another level, on a spiritual level, Timory, you know, God is our Father. And I find that if we can learn how to interface with Him as a beloved son or beloved daughter, we can find a complete happiness there. And I think this is what the divine Son had. And so in His image and in His journey, we need to do what the Son did, and that is to journey with the Heavenly Father in love and in dialogue. And so what's key, I think, here too, especially as little children, when relationships have been thwarted somehow, they haven't really learned or been disposed or experienced what it is to experience the reception of love and freedom. And what's key in the spiritual life is not so much about what we do for God, but it's receiving first His love. And if God truly is a Father, He wants to shower His sons and daughters with expressions of love. So if you had a daughter, you had a son, Timory, the most important thing to you would be that your son or daughter know how much you love them. And secondly, you would want them to receive that love, you know, fully in freedom. And you know that you know, if they know how much you love them and they receive that generously, you know what, whether they become a priest or pilot or they haul trash, they're going to be happy. And so I think it's very important to understand, you know, if relationships were not perfect, I believe they can be made perfect in and through Christ, through His relationship with the Father. And there really is no excuse for being less than Christ. And I really believe we can walk that path the Son did. In fact, I believe that's our calling. And I believe in a primal way, that's what Christianity is all about.
What you're talking about, I remember one marriage and family therapist put it this way to me. That's called disinterested love. And now that sounds in kind of the English language very harsh.
Sure.
But what they're talking about is that it's not a manipulative love, that you're giving a love to a child for the sake of that person, not for your sake.
That's
but
right.
I think, unfortunately, what's happening with the majority of parents or in the majority of relationships is that there's this self-interested love. But if we have disinterested love, also I think we could refer to this as the love of virtue, which Aristotle talks about as, you know, kind of the perfection of friendship and that virtuous friendship. If we were to remove ourselves from the equation, have this disinterest in giving that love to others, that we're no longer manipulating, because so many young people today were always contingently receiving love to this day
right.
from their parents.
Right. Yeah, this is an important subject, and I really believe that to become disinterested, you know, an empty cup is in some way an empty cup. And so if it's never been filled with love, you can't be disinterested. Because if you're lacking in love, there's going to be something which always cries out for love, like somebody who cries out for water or food. Mm-hmm. And so, believe it or not, what I think fosters disinterested love is when we receive the love of the Father and learn how to grow in that.
We learn that unconditional love.
That's right. At least this is a practical way of looking at it, that when we come to receive His love and to be immersed in it and to walk in it, spending time with Him, okay, and making that a relationship. And a father does want to speak to his kids. And if you spend time personally intimate, closing the door, shutting the door behind you in your room, praying intimately with a father, he will speak. In fact, I think this is so primal in the spiritual life, is to learn how to pray at home in communion and in intimacy with the Heavenly Father. And when that's filled, we will then be able to fill others with that same love. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to give what God has.
And there's that great sense of peace that only God can give, and I am giving you total, complete, unconditional love.
That's right.
And this is a story of the Old Testament. We hear about God's steadfast love. I don't even know how many times that phrase is in the Old Testament, but His steadfast love over and over again. We read about that no matter what, He showed that steadfast love for Israel, even in allowing them to be taken into exile. He still loved them to the end.
That's right. And what He showed them is how He loved them when the Israelites, and He did impose a law by which they had to follow. And when they were unfaithful, He always gave them love. But He ushers us into a new covenant, which is a covenant of love. It's a covenant of communion with Him as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And so when this becomes more about not what we do in expressions of love, but moving in a communion of love to give and to receive, that's where true richness is found, and that's where the faith is found. And I believe this is where most Catholics and Christians get trapped. We make love today so much about what we do and what we give, when it should be more not in what we do, but it's more in who we are. It's in the relationships we have. And when love is experienced in that communion, in those relationships, it tends to overcome fear the best. Men and women both, I've counseled many, they're filled with much fear. And only really perfect love casts out fear. And perfect love can only be found in relationship, in moving in those dynamics. And so when one learns how to bond with the Father, receiving His love, interfacing with Him, moving in the journey and communion with the Son and fellowship, that's where true strength is found in love. And that will definitely impact relationship.
So maybe you feel like the upbringing you've experienced, the habits you have of family life or day-to-day life have been damaged. What we're saying is that's okay. God's going to work with you. And if you allow yourself to grow in that prayer life, in the presence as a child before God of that sign, I'm not saying you have to feel like, oh, like a little baby. I'm saying to recognize you have a Father in heaven who loves you right where you're at. And with that love and continuing to be open to it, you will be transformed and be more open to receiving and giving it to others.
That's right. And the transformation, Timory, comes in a kind of consistent posturing. This may sound a little strange, of always being the beloved son or the beloved daughter. In other words, we're sons our entire lives. We're daughters our entire lives. And there's something about it's the reception of that love and feeling that we're beloved as a daughter and son, and to walking in that, that we gain strength to confer that identity as a beloved son or beloved daughter to others. You cannot give what you don't have. Now, I know we're going on to another point, but you can't bestow that which you don't have. So if a person doesn't themselves feel like a beloved son or a beloved daughter, it's going to be very hard to confer that on their own children. But the intermediary of that is to have a spousal relationship to make having children possible and all the rest. But it's in that, I believe it's really in finding yourself as a beloved son or beloved daughter through God that you can really find yourself as a spouse.
And this is what brings hope and counters despair.
That's right.
Because I think many single people are despairing. They feel hopeless. But if they are able to heal that familial
right.
relationship they've experienced with the ultimate familial relationship with God,
that's right.
that's going to bring them great hope again.
I think so. And yeah, it's just in moving in the Son, receiving the Father's love, in some way, there's no other excuse. And I know we've made the father wound a big bag of stuff today. In some way, it can be a reason, but it's not an excuse. And what I mean by that is anybody can overcome that by communing with their Heavenly Father and receiving His love. Otherwise, why did Christ die on the cross? If He wasn't about giving us that freedom and peace which He promised, then it's all in some way a sham. And that freedom and peace comes from through love, in Him, through Him, with Him, in communion with the Father through the Son.
That changes the way you pray your Mass. You're more open to the language. I mean, those are the exact words we hear during the Mass.
Very much so.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Perhaps you yourself are not single and struggling, but you know someone who is. We all do. I can't tell you, especially over the last year, I've had people come up to me and say, I think I'm ready to meet someone now. Can you please introduce me to someone? And I have been cracking up to myself because I'm thinking, what do all these people think, that I just have a plethora of single Pringle friends waiting to meet someone?
I could see that somehow, Timory.
I'll be your Yenta. I'll be the matchmaker. I did try take a go at it once this last year. Totally failed, but at least I tried. But maybe you know someone who is struggling. Share this episode with them. It's right. The least you could do right now.
Absolutely.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez there joining me. What else can people do to help those who are struggling in the single life?
Wow. You know, again, as we just finished from that last piece, I really find that if you think your happiness and your source of peace is going to be found in a dating relationship or a marriage relationship finally, I think you'll be deceived unless that's founded first on the love of God. First in communing and really receiving the Father and really moving through the Son. I mean, that's really the basis by which we find anything. And so if that's not really fulfilled first, you're not going to navigate well any relationship which you do have.
So I want to talk in this next segment, Dr. Chavez, about the dating confusion. Many people want to date. Maybe they've tried to date, but when they find themselves in the situation, they don't know what to do. She's maybe more dominant. Sure. He's more coy. What do people do in the midst of that to rediscover the proper roles in dating?
Yeah, that's really tough because you're asking for a recovery of traditional roles or at least an understanding of them, right?
Right.
You know, in the very first part of what we talked about is man being a leader, protector, and provider. Men get mixed signals about this all the time. I mean, you know, a woman wants a man to lead, but yet at the same time, she talks about him to how independent she is. You know, a woman really does want a man to be a protector, but then she finds herself challenging him on things, right? Mm-hmm. And so a woman really wants a man to generously provide for her. And I hope we get to talk a little bit more about that later because I have a few important things to say about that. But then, you know, she finds that she wants to be, you know, in some way self-sufficient. And she believes, you know, that fiscal responsibility belongs entirely to hers too. So he's confused as to whether he should pay for a meal or not, or whose role that is. So with these loss of these traditional roles and this traditional mission or identity of man and woman, it is very hard. It's a hard world to navigate.
Have you seen anything from the Dating Project? Have you heard about the
I've
Dating
heard
Project?
Of it, and I've, yeah. I did look at it. I forget what I followed up on it. But
there's
yes.
Some great elements of traditional dating in many ways, really learning how to date well. I think it's very helpful for anyone who hasn't heard of it or seen any of the videos. Check out the datingprojectmovie.com. If you're not able to watch the movie, I would at least recommend looking into the professor behind that project, because she actually has a lot of talks available on YouTube, and you kind of really get the heart of how she says this is phase one dating, phase two, phase these three. She does have the thought that, you know, dates aren't taking place, so you ask, you pay. The first date shouldn't be more than like 30 minutes, 45 minutes, maybe coffee or ice cream, not a full meal. Part of that rubbed me wrong, but I respected that she said, you know, you ask, you pay, it's $5 for an ice cream, you know, very simple. But I think there's something great in that respect for men and allowing them, if they're willing, to pay for the bill. It's something they want to do.
Yeah, and I actually, Timur, I'll go even farther than that. I would say it's their responsibility to do. Mm. And I mean, if we're talking about a serious relationship, a man should always be, he should understand that he must provide. In fact, if he can't, maybe she shouldn't be seeing him at all. So if we're talking about, all the more so, if we're talking about an ice cream cone or a dinner, you know, that's on a minor scale of things. So mm-hmm. if he can't provide for that and really step up for that, in my opinion, that's going to be a real problem. So, yes, I believe men should pay.
And that was my one area of objection in the dating project. I think you still let the man pay, but I guess she was getting at me, you know, just if you ask, you pay, just make sure, you know, there's not this awkward nervousness behind the situation. But otherwise, I really would recommend, because I think it gives a really good model mm-hmm. for traditional dating, courtship, and the appropriateness to keep yourself living a chaste relationship, but being on that recon mission, getting to know the person,
that's right.
figuring things out and knowing what to do in those dating situations.
Yeah. And so along these lines, there's just so much that needs to be in some way calibrated or recalibrated in these dating situations. You know, it's men and women both have to be, you know, if we're expecting a man to lead, you know, he should be summoned, you know, by his mentors to try to exude a certain confidence and a self-reassurance. You know, he shouldn't be so uncertain about himself. You know, if he's going to provide well, he should be competent that he's able to do that. So, and a woman too, she should be willing and able to be received and not, and to some way follow his lead. And if she projects an overconfidence, I think she's going to do her some real harm there too.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez. I'm Timory Millington, and you are listening to Trending with Timory. One of the issues in this dating confusion is that many women are often distracted from even being able to receive being asked on a date, or even maybe flirted with enough to get to that point even.
That's right. I think, and I guess in some way it's a natural path that if a woman doesn't find a boyfriend or have a boyfriend, she's going to find other things to interest her. And so what we're finding is men and women both are getting engaged in all these other activities, so they really don't have time. So sometimes men ask women out, say, well, I don't really have to, or I'm going to be out with my girlfriends, or I've got this going, oh, why the way is this church activity? So men find that women are just not available. Now, one of the interesting things is, I was just speaking with a buddy recently about it. He says, you know, I always get turned off by a single woman with a dog. Because
no, cat's worse.
Yeah, she gets the dog and she treats the dog like her new boyfriend. And so it becomes a replacement for the relationship. And so, yeah, do I think women should have dogs or cats? I think so. But even they have to be careful about how they're dealing with them and treating them.
But you know how many friends I've had? Maybe it's just an excuse not to hang out with me. But, oh, I can't do that because I've got to go home and get my dog after work.
That is
somewhat true. And yeah. Not saying that you shouldn't have pets. Everyone who knows I'm not a big fan of pets or dogs is probably laughing right now. But here, I do have to give kind of the benefit of the doubt here. Many women are really busy trying to provide for themselves.
That's right.
They're really busy trying to pay student loan debt off, or they're really busy trying to make sure they're around people to make sure they maintain joy. And so I'd like to bounce this to you in a second here, but my thoughts are to these people who are busy just trying to get by day to day.
Yeah.
Or to the people who are just trying to remain joyful and keep themselves busy, my words to you are, make sure that as you are doing that, that you're at least open to the people around you, that you're listening, you're watching, and you're paying attention.
That's a good point, yeah.
And that you're not closed off or too busy volunteering at an event to talk to people.
That's right. And to take time in relationships. But yes, to go to your point, Timory, this holds out even all the more so for women in this sense, that both are in survival mode, right? They're trying to make it, men and women both. And in some way, I understand men being in survival mode. Men are able to do things of survival, but it's kind of harmful to a woman when she is in hyper survival mode herself, because what happens is when a woman doesn't have that leader, protector, provider, she has to lead for herself. So she does become independent. She does become self-sufficient. And a woman can become hard that way. And I think what happens is women get older, men don't find any entrance into them because they've been in this survival mode so long, they've inculcated habits of being completely independent, being completely self-sufficient. And so a woman needs to learn and grow in a path of surrender. And I really believe the ultimate way of doing that is learning how to commune with the Father and have him teach her. In other words, if she puts herself in his presence as a daughter, finds fulfillment in that, we'll use the term male figure or fatherly figure, that she can get direction and learn to kind of put her guard down a little bit so she can be more open to the men around her.
And I think that, you know, if you do not have that spouse or relationships that's moving toward marriage, where you're looking for that leader, protector, and provider, whether you're single or married and you're not getting that in your relationship, turn to God as that leader, as that protector,
that's right,
and as that provider, because he is the ultimate leader and protector and provider of our lives. And I can tell for myself, I've lived a single life much longer than I had planned, and having to be open to that I cannot do this alone. I absolutely cannot. And a husband or someone who's a man cannot lead by himself, protect by himself, and lead by himself without the assistance of his Heavenly Father.
That's right.
With the strength of his Heavenly Father. So if we can turn and abandon ourselves in those roles and in those needs, that's going to help soften us. And I think of, you know, the docility and the gentleness of Our Lady to be formed in that way.
Yeah, you know, one point I thought you were directing yourself is as much as men need to be leaders and protectors and providers. Yes, they're strengthened through God, but they're strengthened through a girlfriend or they're strengthened through a spouse who is able to trust him in those roles. In fact, that's where a man, especially when he's married, learns how to grow and thrive. When a woman trusts him in that role, he grows in confidence. He moves in the spirit of God the Father, who provides for all those into his care. And then a man really comes into his own. So it's so indispensable for a man to become the full man he's supposed to be. He's supposed to have that Eve in his life to support him, to help him become the man he was called to be.
I think in so much of the struggle of the single life, it's us needing to work through that fear of bonding with others, work through that fear of whatever your past may have been filled of, either
That's
in
right.
bad relationships or a difficult upbringing in relationships today. Or maybe it's just the fear of growing in your faith and opening your heart to others because you've been so distracted and busy.
That's right. Once one begins to really open their heart to God, I believe the transformation can really begin. Many people already do that. I think that's what Christianity is all about, really trusting that God above is a Father and that we can receive his love. He is protecting, he's leading, he is providing for us. And when we surrender to that, surrender in his love, we can actually finally move without fear and move in full communion to which we're called.
This has been Trending with Timory. To learn more about Timory Millington, visit Timory.com.